listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You know what I've come for. Kill them all. Fulfill your destiny. I'll show you the dark side.
When I found you, I saw something truly special.
I've seen this raw strength only once before.
Let the past die.
You'll never be as strong as Darth Vader.
It's time for the Jedi to end.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Never. As in never. Especially not on a Friday. Let's not go into our weekend on a downer. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I love all things Star Wars. You know this about me if you've listened for, I don't know, more than 10 minutes. And on a Friday when we're having a good time and it's a free-for-all, we're mixing in football. It just flows. It flows so well. Good morning to you. Happy almost weekend. We've got an hour left in our show and a lot to get to still. There's so much happening this time of the year. It's crazy to me when people say that July is a down month. Now, you may not have the games necessarily, meaning NFL or college football or building up to that. You may not have the NBA that you're used to, but the Olympics will fill that void. The WNBA, oh yeah, Olympics for that too. Major League Baseball is nearing its trade deadline, and we did have the first big domino drop a couple hours before we started the show, so we'll get you caught up there as well. Hockey fans, I got nothing for you. I hope that you don't mind. What, you know, Star Wars. Star Wars is a great option. Online at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page as well. Plus, you can find us on YouTube. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Phone number 855-212-4227. Wanted to follow up on a story that we talked about on the last show, and it was one that maybe you were just hearing about for the first time. It's become a much bigger deal than simply a couple of drones flying over an opponent's practice in preparation for the Olympic battle that they would have to open up. The reigning gold medal women's soccer team from Canada, the reigning gold medalists, they were the champions at the last Olympics in Tokyo in 2021. And it was a big deal. It was their first ever gold medal in women's soccer. The head coach, she's banished from the Olympics before they ever make their debut. She was just hired in January. Her contract was supposed to be for the Olympics and then through the next World Cup in 2027, and she's been sent home. Bev Priestman is her name, and the Canadian Olympic Committee decided to suspend her for the entire run in Paris. Because the scandal is apparently bigger than just a couple of drones over a practice. Now, if you heard about it or if you were listening to us last night, you know that Canada's first opponent was New Zealand. And members of the New Zealand team complained to the IOC, so the International Olympic Committee, after they noticed a couple suspicious drones flying over what were closed practice sessions. So no media allowed. These weren't TV, so not NBC or any of the other broadcast networks around the world. No, these were closed practices, meaning there would have been no media and no filming. And there were a couple of suspicious drones flying over. So New Zealand alerts the IOC. They start an investigation. But then in the wake of that, an explosive report from TSN in Canada that both the women's and men's soccer teams have employed drones to record practices of other teams for several years. Wow. Bill Belichick everywhere. I know, I'm being snarky. Get this. Even before the gold medal winning games in 2021. And so the Tokyo championship, the Tokyo gold medal victory, that's now under suspicion. I don't know that they strip gold medals. Maybe there's a precedent for that in the past. But if they can prove it, I suppose that it would put that gold medal in jeopardy. But yeah, a report from TSN that Canada's soccer teams, both men and women, have been using drones to record closed-door practices for several years. So this is nothing new, apparently, and it could possibly predate Bev Priestman and the entire coaching staff. Again, if they can prove this report from TSN. So even in their run-up to winning that gold medal 3 years ago, there are reports that they were taping opponents' practices by using drones. So the CEO of Canada Soccer released a statement: over the past 24 hours, additional information has come to our attention regarding previous drone use against opponents predating these Olympic Games. In light of these new revelations, we've made the decision to suspend head coach Bev Priestman for the remainder of the Paris Games and until the completion of our announced independent external review. Now, you may remember that right after New Zealand complained, an assistant coach and an analyst who works with the team, they were sent home immediately. Priestman stepped away, kind of a self-imposed penalty, and did not coach the opener against New Zealand. It was a 2-1 win. In fact, a come-from-behind victory for Canada. But she had said at practice that she had no idea drones were being used. And here's the thing. If the drone use can be proven going back to the Tokyo Games for both the men's and women's programs, then it obviously isn't her. Now, I'm not telling you she doesn't know anything about it, but if the practice was started before she got hired and it was as far back as the Tokyo Games or, gosh, maybe even farther, well, then it's not on her. The only thing is she has a history with the Canadian Soccer Association. She coached in different capacities leading up to 2018 when she went back to England. So then she was working with the senior women's team in England. And also, just as a side note, spent some time working with New Zealand as well, developing players. I don't know if she's able to prove she had nothing to do with it, but it sounds like it was happening even before she got there. Well, as the head coach anyway. And so now she's been banished from the Olympics before she ever makes her debut with Team Canada. And that gold medal match, that gold medal victory from 3 years ago is now in doubt. What a mess. I'm embarrassed for Canada. And it sounds like the men's team could be involved as well. I would think that the only way to make sure that it wasn't also happening in these Olympics, although I guess there could have been drones prior to these Olympics, even before the two were spotted by New England. That's the thing, is how far back does this go and how deep does it run? But the only way to make sure that you send a message that A, it's not tolerated, B, we're going to get to the bottom of this, is to suspend the head coach. You can't take her word for it, and the buck stops with her. It's a lot like the Houston Astros in 2017, when A.J. Hinch, now he admits that he knew it was going on and didn't stop it, though he wasn't really part of it, but he gets bounced, as does the general manager. And there were some suspicious emails that indicated he knew exactly what was going on. But you got to clean house. Priestman still technically has the job, but they hired her to work the Olympics and to lead Canada's defense of its gold medal. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up losing her job, because this makes the entire soccer program look so sketchy. Could you imagine, just for the sake of argument, if this was Team USA? The uproar around the world over the Americans cheating or even appearing to look like they were cheating. I guess until you know what's actually on those drones, it's hard to know if they served any real purpose or gave any real advantage. But just the idea of spying on an opponent, if this was Team USA, oh, heavens. It would be a humongous story and a much bigger fallout and firestorm. But it's Canada, so it's not quite as big.
Jeez, that's a low blow to Canada.
Are you going to disagree with me?
Oh, no, of course not.
If this is Team USA, this is a scandal to take down the Olympics.
Yeah, it's weird. I saw reports that they did, and then I was laughing. I was like, oh, yeah, Canada's spying on the U.S. And again, you mentioned already with the men's. And then the men's went on to spank Canada 4-1. So I was like, okay.
Well, think about it. The U.S. women, granted, they had their own issues. I'm not saying at all that they bowed out of the last tournament or the last Olympics because of this. But if you're Team USA and you think Canada, their spying was going back to the last Olympics, don't you maybe have a beef?
You definitely have a case.
I mean, they beat New Zealand in the World Cup, gold medal game, right? So I would think that you'd have a beef.
Yeah, it's hard. It's not like it's football where you have plays drawn up, like, especially with the ebbs and flows of the game. It's hard, especially.
Still, though.
Oh, it's definitely not fair.
If you can strip individual athletes of their medals because they've been proven to cheat via performance-enhancing drugs or something along those lines. And the IOC takes a pretty hard-line stance about this. Even things like violating their substance abuse policies, like Sha'Carri Richardson. We're talking about weed. There's a lot of athletes that smoke weed, but she did it too close to the game. She tested positive, and she was suspended. So they take a hard-line stance. They really are trying to preserve competitive integrity. And if you're going to strip individual athletes because they pop positive for some type of steroid, remember Ben Johnson, and we could go on and on. There's others. I mean, think about the number of Eastern European countries or even the Russian bloc, right? The USSR going back. I mean, the number of countries that have gotten accused of doping and PED usage and that kind of stuff. A lot of these athletes will get suspended or in some cases will have their medal stripped. So if it's the case with Canada and women's soccer, then they might have to go back and take that gold medal away.
I'd be shocked.
I'm just telling you, if it was Team USA, the whole world would be piling on. But because it's Canada, it's just not as big a deal.
I hear you.
Anyway, Bev Priestman out. It's worthy of a sports minute, if you will. So I'm actually going to do that when we get to the bottom of the hour, tape another one. Boomer Esiason's been out of our New York affiliate all week. And so we get to pick up the slack with his minutes. I wish we made the money that he does to record his minutes. Anyway, big scandal coming out of soccer. We'll see whether or not the U.S. contingent, Emma Hayes and others have anything to say about it. But also, this is kind of funny too. And it's sort of Olympics related, but not really. Kevin Durant's playing and practicing, so that's good news. But Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry, trying to think of some of the others that you would consider aging in this space. Anthony Davis is not old, but I suppose he does have a lot of mileage on him.
Yes, he's aging. Yeah, No. As a Laker fan, no, he's aging. He's aging.
He's got a lot of mileage on him.
Street clothes.
You do have younger athletes like Anthony Edwards, for instance. He's only 22. People were making a big deal of this moment in practice between KD and Ant, where it seemed like KD was helping him with his shot, and people were using that to talk about how he's passing the torch. Well, Joel Embiid has actually said publicly that maybe there's some concerns about how old we are.
We're all different as we get older, and but the thing about greatness is that you adjust and find ways to continue to be effective, and that's what LeBron has done at that age. He's not running and jumping the same way as he was when he was 25, 26 years old, but he's still jumping pretty high, and running pretty fast, so I think he's And of course, we're older players and we got mileages on our body, but we figure out ways to be effective, just as Joe has, as he's gone through injuries and gone through his trials throughout the league as well, his obstacles throughout the league as well. You adjust and adapt. That's what makes you a great player.
Yeah, these guys are still so talented, and the roster is so deep. They run two complete hockey lines out there, and then they've got different combinations and ways that they can screw with their opponents, if you will. And so I think they're going to be fine. It's not like any of these guys are out there playing the entire game, so that does save them and keep them a little fresh, even though they're not that far removed from their own seasons. Now, this Friday, of course, with the opening ceremonies, you've got the NBA players, the members of Team USA, who are going to be in the Olympic Village before the opening ceremonies. They're actually going to ride on the Team USA boat for the opening ceremony down the rivers. It's kind of cool, through the heart of Paris. And so they're going to stop at the Olympic Village to visit other American athletes and then get on their boat as part of the ceremonies. And yes, LeBron is one of the flag bearers. So they no doubt will get a lot of oohs and ahs and photo requests and even autograph requests. So I think it's kind of neat that they would raise morale and just boost excitement at the Olympic Village, where they're obviously not staying, because it would create a big brouhaha, but also I can imagine they'd like better accommodations. So that's cool. It's cool that these NBA players will go and will spend time with other American athletes before they do these opening ceremonies. And then you've got Steve Kerr, who's kind of inciting them now, like, let's go. It's time to lock in. It's time to focus. They open up against Serbia with Nikola Jokic. That's got to be a gold medal threat. And a lot of quality guards for the Serbian team as well. So I should like to see some real competition. I think LeBron James was excited that they got a test from South Sudan and from Germany. He's been terrific down the stretch in these last couple of games specifically. And so, yeah, I don't know that there's any need to be questioning his age. But maybe, just maybe, Joel Embiid likes to stir the pot a little bit. I had said this on our last show. He's given me a topic for an upcoming show. Didn't really have time to do it tonight because we had a bunch of other stuff going on, but we'll save it because it's fantastic. And then, if you hadn't heard, Coco Gauff named the flag bearer for the women's team, or for the women's side, excuse me, which is amazing. And she said when she called her mom, there were a lot of tears. So that's really neat. Neat for her after missing out on the last Olympics because of COVID. Online at A-Law Radio, and then on our Facebook page too. Hope you're looking forward to the Olympics. We'd asked you which sports were must watch for you, as I hope you'll check them out. Let's quick talk to Scott, who's in Michigan. Scott, welcome to After Hours. Oh, so my, there we go.
Sorry. Hey, how you doing today?
I'm good. Sorry, my touchscreen is not working. I blame CrowdStrike, but how are you?
No problem. Now, I hate to do this, but now, when you just told me the boys' soccer was tied in possibly with the girls' soccer?
Men's soccer. Men's and women's.
The men's soccer?
Yeah.
They just had a revival. They just had the best 3 years of their whole entire international experience, at least in the last 50, 60. And they just made it to the semis of the Copas. They've never done that before. Now, maybe that has nothing to do with it, but since you said that, I'm like, yeah, maybe they want to look into that as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, now they're finding out that there's reports that both the men's and women's teams have been using drones to spy on opponents. And not only did the Canadian women win their first ever gold medal in Tokyo, but as you point out, the men are going farther than they've ever gone before.
And let's not forget, the whole reason they had to hire a USA coach, because out of nowhere, and no one knows what happened, the Canadian Soccer Federation went bankrupt.
Spending too much money on drones?
I don't know if it's on drones, but they've done awesome the last few years, and now they have no money, and no one knows where it went. Kind of funny. But the reason I called, a couple of segments ago, you had a guy talking on about the new TV deals and that.
Yes.
And I was thinking, and when I was, the way I fell in love with sports, I know this is a cheesy story, but I'm sure everyone has a similar one. I remember going to Tiger games in Detroit with my dad. We get the $5 bleacher seats. We go there, we fall in love with the sport, and then when we don't go to the game, we watch it at home. And now, not only can the blue-collar workers no longer really afford to go to too many games, now they're making it so you can't afford to watch the games. I mean, we're addicted. We're going to do stupid things to watch sports. But isn't this going to ruin it for the next generation? If these guys, if they can't watch sports, what fans are you going to have?
Well, you can, but as you point out, more and more they're going to streaming services. Now, I don't think the NFL, we'll just use this as an example, will ever completely go to streaming because they really enjoy the fact that they've got these enormous audiences and they can make a lot of great advertising money. But the idea, though, is that if you drop a few games on streaming here and there, well, you're charging Amazon billions of dollars and Netflix billions of dollars. And these companies or these streaming services are more than willing to write really fat checks. So it does pad the bottom line, but the NFL is never going to completely go away from broadcast TV. Not only do they have a very long tradition there, but the ratings are still through the roof. That's not the case for a lot of the other sports.
Exactly.
NBA ratings, baseball ratings on national TV, they have tanked so badly in the past couple of years that those leagues have no, they have no alternative except to find other ways to reach their fans, especially younger fan bases. But the NFL doesn't have that problem. They're routinely got the top 10 viewed programs on TV every year.
Yeah, I look at football, and I'm a big Michigan fan, so I look at both college football and NFL. It's kind of like the Teflon sports. I think they'll be just fine. But when you eliminate fans from being able to not only go to the game and watch the game, at some point, I mean, in the short term, they're going to make tons of money like they are. But say 10, 15 years down the line, when less people are interested because they never went to a game or they went to a few games, at what point is anybody going to have the foresight to say, you know what, this story doesn't end well?
Yeah, I feel like that's drastic. I feel like you're taking a major leap and it's drastic. But I do agree with you that in our current economy, in many cases, the games are too high priced for families. And if you can go to a game, if the NBA, sometimes you have to worry about the load management. But also, you're talking about parking and you're talking about drinks or snacks or a meal. It definitely is expensive. And that's for every market, not just for the bigger cities. And so it's maybe a once a year thing or a once every few years. But again, these, especially NFL, college football, they're not hurting for ticket sales. I mean, think about Green Bay and the thousands and thousands of people that are on the waiting list for season tickets. So yeah, for now, the NFL is extremely healthy. Not worried about that. Online, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Good morning to you. It's a free-for-all, funky, fabulous, fantastic Friday. I don't need any more F-words. Don't give me any more F-words. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Oh, my gosh. I love that. You can almost see it on Dak's face, but you can clearly hear it in his voice as he's answering questions about his future. And he's got another year on his contract. Everybody knows what situation Dak Prescott is in. There's been, oh gosh, so much talk about his next deal, but remember how much talk there was about his last deal and how long that took and how many questions had to be answered. So here is Dak, and he's standing in front of reporters, and they're getting ready to start their training camp, and he pauses, and he thinks to himself, huh, should I say it? And then you hear him utter the words, I'm just going to say it. But there's definitely this pause where he thinks, should I or should I not admit what I'm thinking? And what he says is all the great quarterbacks, they played for multiple teams or they played in two places. I do appreciate, and first of all, his candor, his honesty, and the fact that he said twice, I want to be here. I do want to be here. But it's a business. I mean, you can read between the lines. I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know whether or not there's going to be a contract. And if there isn't, well, then it's all right. Because I can go play somewhere else. CeeDee Lamb is not with the Cowboys. He's back in Houston working out. So CeeDee is holding out, at least right now, for a new contract. Dak Prescott will be a free agent after this season. And then Micah Parsons, their terrific pass rusher, If he doesn't get an extension next offseason, he'll be going into the fifth-year option of his rookie deal, right? And so he could hold out as well. I'm not going to go in and play on what is essentially a lame duck final year of my rookie contract. So you've got all these dominoes, boom, boom, boom. It could be CD, it could be Dak, it could be Micah. How do you pay all of these guys at the same time? And I think that's fascinating. Actually, I really appreciated what Stephen Jones had to say about how complicated this is.
I have a very unique situation. We have a quarterback who played at the top of his game last year, second in MVP voting, who can leave. And then we got two players who can't leave here for 3 years. Theoretically, if we didn't sign either one of them, I guess we couldn't franchise one 3 years from now. But we could sign one of them, and both of them, rightfully so, believe they should be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And totally respect that. So very difficult situations that we're trying to work through with them.
He's already talking about what could happen 3 years down the road. Dak's talking about what could happen after this season. No doubt the questions will be posed to CD whenever he shows up, and Micah as well. I understand they're three of the best players in the league at their positions, and they did win 12 games last year, and you know, they got blown out in the playoffs. But still, there's this window there with Dak having an MVP-like season in 23 and CD being on the receiving end of, what, 12 different touchdown passes. He was first in the league in catches, second in the league in yards receiving, and then Micah Parsons. You don't even need stats to measure his impact on the field. And in order to keep that core together, it's going to require some creativity. I mean, I could give you the metaphor from Jerry Jones about being an option quarterback. He's comparing himself, kind of, to Patrick Mahomes when he's asked about why no offseason moves, why not getting this stuff done now, why weren't the Cowboys more aggressive leading up to this point?
In my life, played option quarterback so many times and wait until the last leaf on the tree. And I, if you want to picture an option, pure option quarterback going out to the sideline, I have run that ball and kept it and not hand it off to the back, not pitch it back, not throw it. And I have run that thing all the way out to the sideline before I made the decision. Because I couldn't get whatever it took to, it wasn't right for me to make the decision. And so what our fans, what you're seeing, what we deal with is we're buying time. We're option quarterbacking, and we're going on out toward the sideline, and we haven't handed it off. We haven't pitched it. We're trying to make our mind up what to do. Does that sound like Mahomes to you?
Well, I don't know. Is Mahomes climbing a tree and picking down every last leaf? That's the part I don't get. What does a tree have to do with anything? So I actually like the analogy. As someone who is big into mental images and metaphors and analogies to explain a situation, just cue up that Jerry Jones again really quick. He starts out talking about an option quarterback, and then he starts talking about a tree.
And so what our fans, what you're seeing, what we deal with is we're buying time. We're option quarterbacking, and we're going on out toward the sideline, and we haven't handed it off. We haven't pitched it.
We're trying
to make our mind up what to do.
The tree part.
Does that sound
like
Mahomes to you?
The tree part is at the very beginning. I just need the first 5 seconds, Colton. The tree part where he says option quarterback and every last leaf on the tree. The beginning.
In my life, played option quarterback so many times and wait until the last leaf on the tree.
Okay. Well, maybe this is something new. Admittedly, I never played football myself, but I don't know what a leaf falling off a tree has to do with option quarterback. Maybe he's referring to route tree. Maybe it's that. He cracks me up. Again, I give him credit for the analogy. That was impressive. Like Patrick Mahomes, who waits and waits and waits until the play develops. And then if he doesn't like what he sees, he extends the play. He scrambles. But still, he hangs on to the ball. And there are very few quarterbacks who can do it with the skill that he can. So that part I like. just don't really understand the tree.
I don't think any of the Cowboys fans would like any of this analogy stuff either. I don't think they care about what you're comparing, Jerry. I bet you won a freaking playoff game. I think that's what they would like. I think they would like to see some playoff success.
Not until the very last leaf falls from the tree.
You know, see, it's funny. See, you find it funny. Just like Cowboys fans probably hate this. And just like me with the Tomlin stuff. See, if you were a fan of either of these teams, you'd be fed up with the funny stuff.
I told
you,
I would take Mike Tomlin in a heartbeat.
I'll send him to you.
I would love that.
I'll FedEx him.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Just don't urinate down your leg. Moments after throwing a no-hitter on Padres TV, and you hear the call on the Padres radio network, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and he mentions the last one. Well, in 2022, Dylan came within a single out of recording his first ever no-hitter, and the guy who broke up that no-hitter with a hit, a single, with two outs in the ninth inning, Luis Arraez, who is now his teammate. And so Luis was one of the first to congratulate him. And here he is 2 years later. He is able to get that final out that he needs. And it was, for a second there, you could almost see it too in his body language. There was a thought that it might have been a hit. It might have, might drop down into right field. But instead, it held up. It didn't sink quickly, and they were able to seal that no hitter. And really cool too, because not just because of his history, but also because it's a career high in pitches, 114 for him. But he had to talk his manager into letting him go back out there after the seventh. So Mike Shildt admits he almost pulled him after seven.
Candidly, there was a back and forth after the seventh with him in a very healthy way, because in my mind, you know, is it 94 pitches? I'm factoring in the beginning of the game, looking to the long view of the season. But immediately he was convicted, like, I'm going back out. I'm like, no, I'm going back out. I'm like, mm-mm. And he comes in, I'm like, I think that's good today. That's good, you know. And I've only had one other guy ever talk me out of it. And I would just love the conviction. I think it's important in my chair to be able to be open-minded and listen to your athletes.
He said, nice job. And I looked up, and it was like 94 pitches. And I just said, I feel great. And if we get through the next one in like 105, then I've thrown 113 this year. And so he, thankfully, they let me talk him into it. And then here we are.
It's a no-hitter, and here we are. Yeah, really neat moment. Only the second in Padres franchise history. So maybe this gives them a spark as we get toward the trade deadline. Still don't know how many buyers there will be, but we had heard from actually an insider right here on the show who joined us on Wednesday night from LA. Rowan Kavner fingered both the Rays and the Rangers, the World Series champions, as teams that would be sellers, or that it had at least considered selling at the deadline. Well, the Rays don't even bother waiting until the deadline gets here. Instead, I would say it was a surprise and maybe a head scratcher. They go ahead and move Randy Arozarena late last night. Now, it was after midnight Tampa time, but in Seattle before midnight. They ship him to the Mariners, and what they get in return, not all that impressive. I know he's had a down season, and it's not like it was in the 2020 ALCS or even, gosh, the year after that. He's an all-star, former all-star, of course. This is just a rougher season for him. But the Mariners know he's a dynamic talent, and they're hoping that as their offense is scuffling along and they're missing some major pieces, that he can provide that spark and that pop. But the odd part is that the Rays got almost nothing in return for him, a couple of lower level minor leaguers, as well as a player to be named later. Why not wait? Why not wait until you're closer to the deadline? And since teams know that you want to move him, you might get a better offer. Yeah, it's kind of a weird one. And to add a little extra intrigue, they are a half game behind the Mariners in the AL wildcard standings. So the two teams have almost the same record. But I guess for the Rays, they've decided to wave the white flag. And for the Mariners, they've decided they're not giving up yet. So it's a tale of two teams in two different divisions. Obviously, the AL East makes a difference where it seems like the Rays don't feel as though they'll be able to make up any type of ground. Yeah, so it's kind of an odd move, but mostly because they didn't get much for him, and you would think that if they'd waited a little longer, they might have had a bidding war of sorts. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, you've got trade deadline coming up in a few days. You certainly got a few pitchers that are available or that have been dangled, but not necessarily any huge names. We're not talking about future Hall of Famers or anything like that, Justin Verlander. But speaking of Justin and Mad Max Scherzer, who both Cy Young winners, both World Series champions now, Max actually just passed his former teammate for 10th all-time on the career strikeout list, which is another neat milestone for him. Mostly just want to see these guys be healthy and stay healthy and continue to pitch. But the Rangers, and I'm speaking about them because talking about Max here, and they're a team that is potentially going to be busy at the trade deadline. The Rangers also kind of strange, eyebrow raising, because the AL West is down this year, and so it doesn't seem like you would need to make a bunch of drastic moves and divest yourselves of pieces. Plus, you're just a few months removed from the World Series. Online, A-Law Radio, and then on our Facebook page or YouTube channel, easy to find us if you want to connect with us over the weekend. I don't know how much connecting I'll do over the weekend. Not any major huge weekend plans, except I'm very excited about this driving range. Oh gosh, it feels like forever since I played golf, and it is since before I got married, before I even got engaged. But I'm trying to get my husband out so that he will hit golf balls on the driving range as well. So that for sure is worth getting excited about on a Friday. And also seeing the start of the Olympics and the opening ceremonies and just knowing that we'll have the red, white, and blue to cheer for. I will definitely be a red, white, and blue shill over the next couple of weeks. Colton, are you a big Olympics dude?
I'm not at all.
At all?
No.
How come?
Could care less.
Couldn't care less.
Same difference.
All right. How come, though? Just never been into them as your family was never really into them?
It's not even that, like, my fiance is huge and all. I'm just not into it.
Well, how about watching with her?
I got other things to watch.
All right. Wow. I feel as though you're not even giving them a chance.
I'm good. It's been that way forever. The only thing I'm into is the World Cup, and that is not the Olympics. So, no, I'm not interested.
What about the Olympic soccer?
No, none of the big players are in it. Even for any of the countries, none of the big players are in it. So
it's true. You don't have a lot of the bigger names. They kind of prioritize either Copa or Euros and World Cup, yes, in 2 years. And for that reason, the Olympics don't get as much of a priority, which is a little odd because on the women's side, you have a lot of the same teams, these national teams that you'll see participate in the World Cup, and yet it's not quite the same for the Olympics on the men's side.
Well, they just have their club teams. Like, they're already having friendlies. You saw me watching one of the friendlies last night, Arsenal and Bournemouth out there in California. So that's why they play their Copa Americas, they play the Euros, and then they jump right back into their teams or club teams.
Priorities.
Money.
Priorities. Now, if they did play in the Olympics, would you pay attention?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Man. It's like
so
watching
it's more
the Euros
about the star power and not feeling like you're getting the same level of competition. I got it. So you're getting ready to make your final commute home from Infinity Sports Network here in Lower Manhattan. How's that going to feel?
Bittersweet.
What's the sweet part?
Not having to do the commute again, driving 2 hours.
Right.
Getting a normal sleep schedule.
Oh, hey, I don't know what normal is.
Well, the problem is I'm piecing together sleep. Like, I'm going to go home, take a 2-hour nap, then I'm going right back to work. Got to pay the bills.
What are you painting today?
Me? I'm painting an inside of a house, thankfully.
That's right. I hope they have the AC on.
Oh, she hasn't. She hasn't had the AC on.
Don't! It's like the elevator that brings us up to the 10th floor here. They refuse to use the AC in the elevator, and it freaks me out. Well, it's been good to work with you. Thank you so much for the time and effort you put into it. And now, sayonara, Colton has removed himself from the running for our producer job. So we go back to the drawing board. Other than going to the driving range, I've got yard work this weekend. And then Yeah, we'll convene on Sunday night and we'll get after it. Have a great weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!